great to be back. It's been a long time coming. We've started a new season of Parenting Reality Bites podcasts. And back with me again is Paula and Grace. And this parenting podcast, Reality Bites episode, we are calling Fears and Panic. Coming back into school, dealing with new guidances, all that chaos, and then still trying to raise a family and what looks like Christmas could be in indoors very much so. Amazon are going to love us this year. So why don't we kick off by going around the room and just telling everybody a little bit about ourselves and what we do. Why don't we start with you, Paula?
Hello, I'm Paula. I am married to Stephen. We are still married if you listen to the lockdown, if you listen to the podcast in lockdown. That's a win. We have two sons, Joshua, who is 11 and a half, and Wilbur, who is 8 and a half, who are back at school. Woohoo!
So there's a lot of excitement around this room as well. Not just you, Paula. What do you get up to? Day-to-day stuff, Paula?
I'm a stay-at-home mum. I am a governor at the primary school that my younger son goes to. And I am a key volunteer with the lovely Grace and Ivan at church.
Awesome. Grace, what about you?
Hello, my name's Grace. I'm married to Fraser and we've got two girls. They are 6 and just 4. They are currently not at school, but I'm sure we will get to that in the podcast. I am the children's team lead at Andover Baptist Church.
That's great. And we will definitely be touching on why your poor little family are not back at school in a second. Obviously, my name is Ivan. I am the children and youth director at ABC. I get to work with these two lovely ladies pretty much on a daily basis now, the way we've been working. These guys have been putting out some great stuff. If you get a chance, do have a look on our Facebook pages, ABC Kids and Youth, or on our Instagram pages, also again, ABC Kids and Youth, or hashtag Be More Jesus for the older guys, the older youth. And they've been smashing out some great work. I am married to Christy. We have a little girl who is 6 going on 16. The drama continues, and she's at school, so there's definitely a bit more silence in the house, which is not a bad thing, but come 3 o'clock, the tornado has arrived again, and we wait for Hurricane Ann to pass on at some point. So kicking us off, Grace, we touched a little bit about your two not being at school. Walk us through what happened to your poor selves, which will lead us onto this new guidance that we are all trying to figure out.
So, last week I got a phone call from my youngest preschool manager to say that a child in Olive's bubble at preschool had a confirmed case of COVID. So Olive had to isolate for 2 weeks, but to isolate a 4-year-old all on their own in a house is very difficult to do. So we were told we can all go about our daily business. Edith can still go to school, my eldest. We can still go into work as long as we keep Olive away from the rest of us.
Which is just so easy with a 4-year-old.
Yeah, we'll just lock the door behind, it'll be fine.
I'll just shut her in her bedroom and post her meals under the door. So basically, talking to my eldest school and Fraser and I talking, we just decided that I would do mostly everything for the children. Fraser would keep his distance and still go to work. And thankfully, I can work from home. And I can't, because my husband's a shift worker, I can't get my eldest to school without bringing my youngest. So my eldest school said no thank you. So I've got both of them at home And we are free on Friday, people. We are free on Friday. So my poor then 3-year-old has just had a birthday a couple of days ago in lockdown. And later I will tell you all my parenting fail to do with the birthday in lockdown. But bless her, she has taken it on the chin, and she was turning 4, so it wasn't, they don't notice, do they? So it was just me sending like panic texts to Paula and Ivan and all sorts of people to say, oh, she's got a birthday in lockdown. But so many children have, so yeah. It's all confusing guidance, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we're all trying to make the best decisions possible, but when it just seems like it's not very clear, and then so, you know, one has to stay at home, but everybody else can go, and you're kind of like, but that doesn't make any sense. You're trying to stop this. You know, what's to say that it's not going to get passed on in the family?
And we've had this conversation 100 times to do with our job, haven't we? And Paula, for you as a head of governors, to say, I could do this, I could go to work, but is that right? You know, is that morally, if I had something from Olive, if I had COVID from Olive and I went to Tesco's, you know, I'm allowed to do that, but is that right? So I've just felt like I'm going to just stay in and keep my conscience clear for 2 weeks.
It's an interesting thing you picked on, and let's bring Paula in here. In terms of a governor at a school, you know, having to get everything prepped to get kids back at school, and then you have this particular situation where, you know, one family has got a positive test case in, not that the Hennies have a positive case, but they've decided to isolate. But then you've got others that have got somebody tested positive in the family, but then still choose to drop off the others at school. Where does that leave you guys?
It's very tricky. Stephen and I were just talking about this morning, because there will be people like Grace's family who decided, actually, no, this doesn't make so much sense that we're all going to isolate. But there will be other people who go, well, if we're told that we can all carry on, then we'll all carry on. And they could spread COVID around everywhere. So it's very tricky. I think it all comes down to risk assessments at the moment, and which seem to be pages and pages long. I'm also on the management committee for a charity, Andover Child Contact Centre, and we're just in the process of writing our risk assessment for reopening. And you just have to risk assess those situations, and as best you can, to trust people, which is very hard, particularly when you're dealing with very vulnerable families who, in the situation with the charity that I support, that if families haven't seen each other for a long time and they have a slightly raised temperature, but it means they won't be able to see their child, are they going to declare that to everyone? So that's very, very tricky. So I think you just have to risk assess that people in authority with, you know, in schools, in charities, anyone who's working with lots of people, you just have to risk assess those situations as best you can, and then and hope and pray that other people will do the right thing. But it's tricky, really hard.
I suppose it's that moral compass as well, isn't it? I think, you know, without picking on the Hennies too much, having that kind of go, actually, we don't feel comfortable about putting anybody in this position. So actually the best thing to do is pull ourselves out. And we do have these legitimate reasons, and, you know, and a flip to that, understand that they are those that are vulnerable that don't have the choice to do that or the option to do that. It's the difference between not having a meal tonight or having a meal tonight because you have to go to work and get paid. So like you say, it's just about how we risk manage.
And every case is so individual. So like if Olive was a couple of years older, 6, you know, I may have sent my eldest into school, because as they get older, you can keep them more isolated and you can. But like I said it so many times, my youngest is like a blender without a lid. Like she touches everything in my house.
Yeah.
And I can't go behind her with a flash wipe. Other brands are available. And wipe up after her. Whereas if she was, you know, 7 or 8, you can keep them a bit. So I think so much, luckily my eldest school have been so gracious in allowing our decision, because they could say, no, the government guidelines are that Edith comes in and we will, you know, fine you, or we will for not. And I think schools have got a bit of leeway in allowing people to kind of do what they feel is best.
Yes.
Because if you've got a teenager, they definitely could and probably would like to isolate in their room by themselves for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's tricky.
Yeah. Doesn't mean going on holiday, ladies and gentlemen. It just means making the best decision. With that all in mind and trying to work out the new guidance, I think as a church, we're trying to follow that moral line as well. We're trying to say, look, we understand that this could be possible, but actually, is it the best thing? You know, do we want to help contain this situation? And actually, the best thing we could do right now is stick to government guidance. You know, let's stick to that no more than 6, because actually we can, you know, we can contain that, you know, do the track and trace thing. And you know, when the time is right, when this season, and it will come to pass, is over, let's all regather safely. Let's not, you know, let's get the kids back into the building. Let's get everybody back into the building, and do that safely without causing any more harm or spreading anything any further. And I think there are so many gray areas, but actually sometimes this is where we just need to use that moral compass, you know, that judgment call, and say, look, actually we feel this is the best option for us. That being said, we talked about the risk assessment and all the school stuff and how we're keeping everybody safe. Some of the fears and panic going into dropping your kids off at school or picking your kids up.
That they'll come home again.
Okay. We're all about honesty and authenticity in this podcast. So, Paula, you chimed in. What dropping off, picking up, I mean, you've got a young man who's just started secondary school. He's on a train. There are many fears and panics there, I'm sure, but give us a few.
Mostly it's about him staying in the fudge shop in Salisbury all day long. I'm actually not, it's really funny because I have talked before about how I can suffer with anxiety, but COVID, I'm not anxious about the boys being at school, and I'm not anxious about Josh catching the train, whether that's because they're a bit older. And like Grace said, they are only slightly more aware of hand washing and not being able to touch everything. They still pee everywhere. I've not been too anxious about them going. We have all downloaded the Track and Trace app, which I thought was really interesting, because my eldest son travelling to Salisbury every day on the train is the most vulnerable of all of us. My husband's working at home, I'm at home, Wilbur goes to the village school down the road. And he, because he's under 16 and we put in his date of birth, he wasn't allowed to download, to download the app on his phone. So I have to say my husband did make up a date of birth to make him over 16 so that we could download it, because he is the most vulnerable of all of us. I'm not overly anxious, whether that is because I am the governor at the school, so I've been involved at the primary school, I've been involved in the risk assessment, so I know how much work has gone into keeping the children safe at school. I'm not too anxious. I think my biggest anxiety about it, so this morning my younger son was tearful going into school. My biggest anxiety comes with that, of the emotional effect that lockdown has had on him in particular. My older son's coped quite well with it, but him in particular, it's just been an emotional roller coaster. He was so excited to go back to school, and it's like now he's done 3 weeks and it's not just about seeing his friends. He actually has to get to work and it's all a bit different. He's quite emotional. So, and then that brings about anxiety in me. So this morning, because I overanalyze of, oh my goodness, am I doing something wrong as a parent? Is that what's making him upset? So, I think that's my anxiety, is how it emotionally affects them. I'm not overly anxious about them being back at school because of COVID.
Yeah. What about you, Grace? Your brief stint that you've had back at school.
My whole 2 weeks that I've had back at school. My anxiety isn't about them being at school either. And even now with the confirmed case, I will happily send my girls back. Because I think it's going to happen. Like, I think it just has to be a given that at some point most of us are going to have to isolate over the next couple of weeks. I just don't know whether I can bear to do it again. But my anxiety comes with the rules and regulations that I might break them. So, for instance, my eldest goes to a school that's quite a big site and they have quite a comprehensive one-way system. And sometimes there's two gates, one on one side of the campus and one on the other side. And my anxiety comes with, am I going the right way? Am I doing the right thing? Will somebody come and say, excuse me, you're not meant to be standing here? Or, you know, will another mum think that I'm rude for just waving and walking off instead of congregating and chatting? And it's right at the start of being allowed to socialise with people, I found it quite hard to keep on track of if everybody was okay with things, you know, like, oh, are you okay with coming to sit in my garden? Are you okay with this? Are you okay? And I feel like that's kind of reared its head again with the school gate situation, because normally I'd stand around and chat, and the school has said, no, congregating, you just walk through this one-way system and pick your child up on the way. But I don't want to be the mum that just ignores all the other mums either. So my anxiety comes with that bit of it, and, you know, have I sent my child in with the right things rather than the wrong things? And has she sneaked any toys in her pocket that she's not allowed to take into school? And all of those sorts of things. But everybody is doing the same thing, aren't they? So.
Yeah. And I think most of the schools are doing that now. There's a one-way system. It's a pick-up and drop-off. And they are really, but particularly for ours, is that they really are trying. They are strongly recommending that everybody wears a face mask in the school. They are with the one-way system. Please, you know, try and stick to the system and the times to come and drop off. All our timings have been staggered, you know, for pick-up and drop-off. My anxiety, I mean, part of my anxiety / aggression is when people do not follow the one-way system or break the rules, or, you know, and then I get angry with myself when I forget my face mask. So, you know, I'm walking around trying to, like, use my hoodie as a shield to kind of say, you know, I am making an effort. My anxiety and fear levels come up when somebody behind me coughs or sneezes. My brain goes into meltdown. I find going into shops very stressful now. You know, when it was in lockdown, actually, it was very pleasant. Actually, I really enjoyed going back into the shop because I felt like, oh, yeah, I can just stroll. Like, I'm not going to bump into anybody now. I'm not going to be touched by anybody accidentally. And now it's chaos as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, that kind of amps it up for me. And then when you're not standing that, you know, I don't know about you guys, but our school has marked off different spots where you can stand. So they've given you the 2-meter distance. But, like, don't stand on my spot, like, until I've moved. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, my brain is like, we're doing this for a purpose. You know, we're not going to beat this if we're not all going to be doing this. And that's where my fear and anxiety comes in, and that panic, because I'm like, oh, are we just going to keep doing this because you can't be bothered to do one or two simple things, you know, wear a face mask and stand on your spot. Do you know what I mean? Or I was sharing with you guys the other day, I was in the shop a couple of weeks ago before everything got stricter, but we were still kind of asking to give everybody the space and the 2 meters. And we got to the till, and the gentleman behind me was so, like, panicked he was going to lose his spot behind me, he decided to, like, unpack his groceries on top of me. And I was like, I need some space. Like, and I told Christy and Faith to move down so I could get away from him. And then he puts his hand on my shoulder to say sorry. And I'm like, why are you touching me?
I have to tell everybody about Ivan and I met a young person for coffee before they went off to university. And a guy about 5 meters behind coughed. And Ivan turned into, like, the Karate Kid. He was like, wow, what was that?
It's not pleasant. It's like, it's in my coffee now. I can't drink it. I'm done. But I think that's just, I think, you know, for me, that's my thing. Like, it is probably something, I mean, we're all going to cough. We're all going to sneeze. It is the cold and flu season. But I think even more so now, that's what I'm worried about, either sending Faith in and she picks up a cold, and then it's not just a cold and it turns into something else. And you know what I mean? So that's where my head's at with the whole thing. But
I'm anxious about doing COVID tests again. We did COVID tests in August. That is what I'm anxious about. Sorry to jump in. We did COVID tests in August because both the boys got a cold, which turned into a cough. So we all trundled off to Swindon for COVID tests. And we were like, they need to warn you what it's going to be like. I was saying this to Stephen last night, like, they need to warn you not to go on your own with a child. Yeah. Our friend had to pin down her son, her 2-year-old son, like, swabbing him. Yeah. Anyway, and we went, and Stephen and I were like, we'll do the tests to show the boys what to do, which then just after that followed 30 seconds of Stephen and I gagging and retching in the front of the car. Wilbur, Josh, my eldest, very practical, so he was just like, it's horrible, just got to get it done. Wilbur sobbed. We had to bribe him with Pokemon cards. And I'm just dreading the thought. Wilbur sat at the table last night and he said, I'm not having another COVID test. I'll just isolate for 2 weeks. I was like, hell no.
It is really like, you know, when they do that swab, apparently it's like they're trying to touch your brain and touch your tonsils.
Oh, it has to go up to here, like right up to your nose, like the bridge of your nose. Oh, it's hideous.
Right. I'm with Wilbur. I'd just rather isolate for 2 weeks.
So that is my anxiety, COVID. I like, it was horrible, but I did it. It's the thought of having to prepare my son, my younger son, to do that again. That makes me anxious.
Yeah. I think that got really heavy very quickly with all the stresses and fears. To bring a bit of levity into this, what has been the best thing about this awesome 7-week holiday that we've just come out of? For Grace, she had a 2-week break and then was back on holiday for another 2 weeks, isolating. What's been the best part? What's been the best part of the summer that we've just had? And what, closely followed by, what's the worst thing that's about the summer? So let me kick it off. So I think this summer, we've probably had one of the best summers we've had, just in terms of, yes, it was long, and I think that might have been the tricky. It was not the worst thing, but it was in one sense the length, just because actually 7 weeks with a 6-year-old trying to occupy them for 7 weeks, and still trying to work and all this sort of stuff was really tricky for us. But that being said, we were able to do a lot more things. We were able to spread the stuff out a bit, and actually as a family, we just did like a few day trips or one or two overnight things, and actually found that there was so much around us that we just didn't really notice. Stuff within an hour away or 45 minutes that we've always heard about. We're just like, oh yeah, but you know, it's so far, and you know, when it comes down to it, it's literally down the road. You know, if you've got 100 miles in your tank, you know, you can get to wherever you need to get to these places very easily and very cheaply. And so we've really enjoyed being able to do that. So that was the best thing for us. I went to Legoland for the first time in 8 years. I mean, it's bucket list stuff, isn't it? So the worst thing for us, though, was probably is the bulge that accumulated around my waistline in the summer, because it was like, well, there's nothing else. You know, might as well just, you know, it's summer, we're on holiday. You know, let's...
It's the
last 6 months. Yeah. The last 6 months were chaotic, and then the last 7 weeks of that month, just that's where it all went pear-shaped very quickly. So needless to say, I started gym yesterday, and I couldn't get off the toilet yesterday because my legs had no power. So that was awesome. Paula, you look like you've got some stuff on your mind.
Do I? The summer seems like a long time ago now. I'm racking my brain. We had a lovely summer. The best thing about the summer was stopping homeschooling. I've never felt relief like it, other than after I gave birth. that relief of, oh my goodness, we don't have to do this slog every day was lovely. And so that was really good. But we went away for a week to the Lake District, which was also really lovely. We tend to go abroad for holiday, so we don't go to places in the UK a lot. And so we had a week in the Lake District, which was really beautiful. My eldest son in particular loved it, and that was really nice. And even though it rained, it didn't matter. We just went out anyway, and that was really nice to have a break of our four walls at home. So that was lovely. So that was definitely the best thing about the summer. The worst thing about the summer, I think we all slipped into quite lazy mode. My husband and I don't think we got our heart rate up at all. that says something about our marriage, doesn't it?
Well, nobody was thinking it until now, Paula, so thank you very much.
In terms of exercise, physical exertion, I'm just going to stop now. In terms of, keeping fit, let's put it that way, we all slipped into a bit lazy, and I think the boys were a bit sort of sluggish, so getting back into term has been a bit hard of, no, you can't sit around playing video games because there's homework to do and there's stuff to do and there's these things to do. So I think that's probably the worst thing about the summer. And it does happen normally in the summer holidays anyway. Like you do, you know, we relax and take our foot off the pedal. But I think this year more than, because the relief was mine and mostly at not homeschooling rather than the teachers at school. I think I just went, we'll just chill. And we probably chilled a little bit too much. But I mean, it's not really a bad thing, is it? The worst has just happened at sea.
How bad can chilling out really be? what about you, Grace? How are things in the Henny household? Best worst thing?
I think I'm going to take Paula's worst thing as my best thing.
Oh, yeah.
Over the summer. I think we're quite guilty of packing our schedules as a family, really, really, like, and especially in the holidays, just feeling like we have to be doing a big thing every day to, like, entertain the children and make it really exciting. So probably a combination of that and your best thing, Ivan, in that, like, we just did a lot of going for walks from our front door. We discovered, like, walks from our front door that we have never done in the 5 years that we've lived here. Going to the park again was amazing, wasn't it, when play parks opened and those sorts of things. So that's probably our best thing, that we just slowed down, and I realised that I could save myself a lot of money and the children still have a really great time. The worst thing about the summer probably was an extension of that, again, in the laziness, and also that I left everything really last minute because I was enjoying doing basically nothing for the whole of the summer holidays, that it came to the start of school and I was like, oh, next week I've got, like, uniform to get and labels and all of those sorts of things. And I normally would have done that before the summer holidays, and I left everything to the last minute when the nation had also left everything to the last minute. So I was trying to, like, get blue polo t-shirts and things like that that just had all sold out everywhere. And I could, it was a bit like getting a test. I could get blue polo shirts if I wanted to go to like Edinburgh to pick them up. So that was the worst thing, was that I got, I'm not a laid back person, and I was so laid back over the summer that I caught myself out by the end in panicking to get everything ready. But I did it. I got the blue t-shirt in the
end. There in the end. Whilst we're on you, Grace, let's go for the trophy parenting fail trophy. Best parenting fail coming out of summer to date. What is yours?
Well, I don't know if it's a parenting fail, but it was like a laughable / sad moment. So
they're the best.
As I mentioned, my youngest turned 4 this last weekend, and she is absolutely obsessed with Barbies. And I had this grand idea of making a life-size Barbie box so that she could stand in it and pose like a Barbie and just have a great time. And so I got the call from the preschool manager that we had to go into isolation. And I was like, no, I'm going to go all out with this Barbie box so it just makes her birthday. And as I'm there making it and spray painting it and making it all look like gorgeous, my husband just says to me, Grace, you do realize that you've effectively made her like an isolation station. Like, you're rubbing it in even more that she has to be isolated from everyone. Like, so there's, like, I'm trying to make it all fun and take pictures of my daughter posing, and now every time I look at them, I'm just going to remember the fact that she had to be isolated, and I made her a physical isolation box for her to stand in. I was like, you've turned my lovely thing into something really sad. So in years to come, when I look back at the sweet photos of her posing in the box, I'll just remember the year that she had to be isolated from everyone, and I rubbed it in even further to her poor little 4-year-old self. So I'm sat here right now with the Barbie box next to me, looking at it, like, tinged with sadness. That is,
it is an awesome box. It is awesome, the Barbie box. I have seen it. It's cool. Not physically. I haven't been in Grace's house, just to make she has been sticking to the rules.
That's another thing, isn't it? Like, you have to qualify every comment now, isn't it? But we haven't seen each other. We haven't been anywhere near each other. We had the same issue at church the other day, didn't we? Where it's like, we said something, and the comment was, oh yeah, but we just bubble anyway. And it's just like, but we didn't do anything. It was fine. Yeah. Those things. Paula. What about you?
Parenting fail. Oh, I'm really struggling. So my eldest son has started school and he has to catch a train. And as my husband will tell you, time management is not my thing. I'm always like, I think it's a rebellion. I've analysed it as I do. And my dad is very on time, like an hour early for everything. And I think it's like I'm rebelling against my childhood of getting ever early and having to wait. And so I literally skid into places either on the button or a minute late, always apologising for being late. And now we have trains. Like, he has to catch a train. It's not a case of little village school where I can just rock up and I know all the teachers and go, oh, sorry, typical me, ha ha. And he has to be there. And we had one morning, the other morning, where I convinced myself that I would have time for to like do everything and have a quick shower before getting him to the station, and got in the car with him, and it must have been like 5 minutes later than my husband would normally get. Of course my husband would get him there on time. We were in the car and I noticed Josh is like rocking back and forwards in the front seat, and then he's like, Mum, how long does it take to drive to Salisbury? And I didn't get what he was doing. And then we got to the train station like 5 minutes before the train is there, 10 minutes, and it all came spilling out where he was like, finally managed to get here on time. like just these really sarcastic comments. And I felt awful because he felt it was anxiety was what the rocking in the seat next to me was. And how long does it take to drive to Salisbury? Because I suddenly clocked that he was measuring, like, if we're late for the train, is Mum going to be able to get me there on time? And I was like, this poor kid is suffering because of my, like, obsessive thing of getting nowhere on time. and in the afternoon I have to be at the train station, and I'm also being really rubbish at that, leaving to the point where my husband calls me. I'm at the park with Wilbur, who's playing. I'm at the park chatting to someone 2 meters distance, just to clarify. I'm chatting. I've got so caught up in the chatting, I totally forget that I have to be somewhere, that we are then skidding in my husband's car around the corners to get to the train station. So yeah, it's just, that's my parenting fail timing for my poor son, who started new school, as if that isn't like anxiety building enough, and then his mother can't be on time for anything. Hasn't missed a train yet.
Good. So ours came as a bit of a lift, well, it shocked us really, and any more than Christy. So I'm retelling the story, and I'm sure Christy will listen to this and say I got it wrong. So Christy was sitting on the couch, and Faith, our little girl, was started talking to Christy about where babies come from. And Christy's like, I said I'd get this book and we'll work through the book. She says, no, I don't need the book. I know where it is. I know what it's all about, you know. And basically gave her a rundown of how babies are made. She...
The stork, right?
So Chris is like, well, okay, so where did you hear it? How did you, was it the teachers? Was it at school? She's like,
please don't say my child.
She's like, no, it was here at home. She's like, okay, now we're like panicking us. Like, what has she seen? What if we left on by mistake? Do you know what I mean? Like, is she, you know how you like leave, like Netflix on, it just scrolls to the next episode of like, Big Bang Theory or whatever it is. So we're like, what have we left on or anything like that? She's like, no, it was from Operation Ouch. She says, what's this episode of Operation Ouch where they go through the how babies are made? But like, they go through, it's like how, you know, mom and dad make a promise together and that's how babies are made. I was like, oh, well, that's really well handled. Like, they haven't really gone into detail, but mom and dad get together and make a promise, and then, you know, like, all of a sudden a baby appears. But like, for us, it was like, man, we just let this kid down. Like, we were supposed to get this book and walk her through this whole jungle. And then, like, it turns out, we watched the program with her. She's like, yeah, but we watched it together. Like, this is a new news. Like, I was in the middle and you guys were watching the program with me. And I'm like, man, we are bad parents.
This is meant to be this life-altering thing. And she, like, just takes it on
her. So, yeah, so we got schooled by a six-year-old. And that happens a lot all of a sudden. I don't know about how you guys are finding it, but all of a sudden, my daughter is just like laying down some like heavy truth about a few things. She's like, yeah, Dad, you know what? They might not know the rules. You just need to be more patient.
Like, oh, schooled.
Like, this kid is on fire.
The other day, so my daughter is the same age as Ivan's daughter, and the other day I said to her, Edith, today might be the day that we put the heating on for the first time. And she said, Mummy, look at your arms. You've got a t-shirt on. Try to put a jumper on before we turn the heating on. And I was like, I don't know whether to be proud or like ashamed.
It's been so good. I've really missed just catching up with you guys this way and spending some time. So it's been so good to be able to do this again. For those of you who are listening wherever you are, we're going to be doing this every other week. So please watch out for an episode of our podcast every other week. If there's anything you'd like us to talk about, you know, send us a message either through our ABC Kids Online Facebook page, Messenger, or through Instagram, ABC Kids and Youth.
We're not doing sex ed for your kids, though.
Yeah. There's a big line. It's a big line. We're not doing that.
Just talk to Faith about that.
Yes, she'll sort you out. She'll get it on. So yeah, reach out, and we'd love to remain in contact with you. Come and check out everything we're doing on our YouTube channel, Andover Baptist Church. And we've got loads of stuff happening for the kids and the youth. We go live every other week on a Sunday at 10:45 as well. Again, on our ABC Kids and Youth page, Facebook page, come and check that out. And if there's anything, we'd love to remain in contact with you. So, you know, if you get a chance, you know, and you see you're on our website, sign up to our church suite so that we can send you some of the cool stuff we're sending out and working through. So from me, Ivan, Grace and Paula, it's been great spending time with you guys. We're going to wave and say goodbye. Nobody else can see us.
Bye.